You know, Shane, I like these little moments before the show when no one's listening and we can just talk between you and me and we can ask each other, you know, some pretty serious questions and
ponder the depths.
It's just you and me.
Human experience. Yeah, just us.
So I had a personal question for you.
Yes.
Since you have been on assignment in Florida,
yes,
and you've been down and back.
That's what I was doing down there. I was on assignment.
I was just curious what your favorite road trip snack might be.
Chex Mix. Chex Mix and pretzels, and I don't know why.
Welcome to What in God's Name? She is Shana Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We're doing current events and culture from a philosophical and theological point of view.
Getting ourselves past the binary of the political and the economic, because the political and the economic are too constricting. But when it comes time to start considering things like human flourishing and what is worthy of humanity, then we have to go deeper, right? We have to go beyond that binary.
That is so. We're steering a course between the programmatic secularists and the quasi-theocrats. Programmatic secularists say, no religion in the public square. And the quasi-theocrats say, oh yeah, my religion in the public square. And you know what else, Shana? I was just thinking, we're also steering a course between some in our culture who want to get rid of all the dead white European men, who see all the dead white European men as thoroughly corrupt, mm-hmm, and need to be purged, versus those on the other side who see dead white European men as the culmination of history and nothing higher will ever be achieved. And we need to restore to glory our white European roots.
Mythology.
And mythology.
Mythology,
indeed.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're steering a path through that because we do draw on some dead white European men, and we're trying to also incorporate other voices, other wisdoms. Do you agree
with
that?
And that's an important skill, I think, is to always look at a perspective and ask yourself whose perspective isn't being represented, so that we're constantly aware of and bringing people from the margins in. So that's an important concept for sure.
We do some serious thinking, some serious feeling. We invite you to join us in seriousness, and we take that seriously, our seriousness. And because we take our seriousness seriously, we aim to have some fun as well. And so we have a spinny wheel. We give it a spin. It's an opportunity to reflect on some core values and key ideas of our show. And it's a way to help people who are new to our show to understand a little bit more about what in God's name. And so if you are listening for the first time, we welcome you. Shana's going to give this puppy a spin. Where did it land, Shana?
It landed on human flourishing.
Human flourishing. That's a key concept of our show. We want to ask the questions and engage in the conversations that lift up human flourishing from different points of view. I'd say we have a spiritual / religious entree into questions of human flourishing, and we're also aware of the pluralistic society we live in and try to draw on also other ways that may not be theological, but which, I mean, the question of human flourishing is a perennial question.
Just in case folks are tuning in for the first time, relax. We don't mean human flourishing at the expense of, you know, the environment, et cetera, that human flourishing is about the flourishing of creation, and that any human flourishing that we would recognize as being good would have to be enfolded, would have to be a part of, in harmony with the wider world. So
yes,
with that, human flourishing is actually sort of also an interesting place for us to begin today.
It's perfect because we are looking at pandemic time, a year in.
Talk about the antithesis of human, well, the antithesis of human flourishing and potentially not, right? What happens to human flourishing in that context? How, what have we learned? What do we see differently as we're coming out of this? Are maybe some questions to ponder, and I suspect you probably have a couple.
I do. So you've launched into today's show, which is about raising the question, what questions do we need to ask as a society? So not just as individual people, but as a society, what questions do we need to ask, but probably won't? I'll throw that in there.
Yeah.
You know, questions that we need to ask, but they make us uncomfortable, or we don't know, we don't have language to talk about it, or for whatever reason,
it's
we
not
don't
like,
ask those questions.
It's not likely to come up on a Zoom chat. You know, it, you'd have to be intentional about wanting to go and explore that. I mean, I suppose if you're part of a faith community, you know, those questions will naturally emerge in context of any good preaching or adult education, you know, sort of classes. If you're not part of a faith community, then where will you ponder that in a space that allows you to get beyond the political and the economic? Here, on What in God's Name?
Yeah, so what questions do we need to ask as a society but probably won't, based on our year in on COVID pandemic time? I have two, Shana. And the first one, I'm not sure what the question is, but I'm hoping you can help me find the question in this. And it, the category I think that's important for our society to consider, but probably won't, is a variation on denial, or it's in the category of denial and consciousness. And so I guess I feel like we are a society in denial about a bunch of things. And I think that one possible reflection from pandemic time is whether we just go along as before. Everything is fundamentally okay, and we just went through a blip. Or is there some kind of awakening that can happen because pandemic time revealed things to us? This is tricky and difficult to think about. And so as a society, like, how does a society come to awakening? We can talk about, I mean, it does happen. Historians look at this kind of thing. So what's the question? What's the question I'm trying to get at here? Can we wake up? And I'm not even interested in the content of what we're waking up to, although that could be important, or certainly is important as part of the conversation. But I'm just thinking about that a society, just like human beings, human individuals, can be in denial about things.
You know, I'm feeling the pull back towards the political, and wondering how much of this unconsciousness or denial is a consequence of, you know, the boxing match that's been taking place in the political arena that keeps us focused on, I mean, certainly the era of Trump has done nothing to enhance our ability to see clearly what the hell is actually going on. Many people have been led far, far, far astray from reality, and that's a problem. But as we're focusing on all of that, you know, and I think about for myself, things that changed for me, things that I will never be able to unsee, right, are things like the invisible workers, the invisible but necessary, essential, right, was a term that we came up with, essential, who are the essential workers? Well, yes, and we all focused on the doctors and the nurses and the first responders, and yeah, and then suddenly it was, there's no meat on the shelves because the workers in the meat plant factories have all gotten sick. And how about all those folks working in the grocery stores? You know, I remember in the early days being just so grateful for their presence and, you know, how much they were in my prayers because of how much they were exposed, and bus drivers and domestic workers, you know, people who only get paid if they're in somebody's house cleaning or taking care of somebody's kids. And that's a huge exposure that some people could do. Or like, I will never not be aware of that. Again, I can't, that I was not aware of it before the pandemic. I am painfully aware of it now, because of how many of those essential but invisible workers represent those classes of people who are marginalized anyway. That's not a real comfortable awakening. But so suppose I'm not alone. And sure, there's a lot of people who aren't considering this, aren't interested in it, aren't looking at it. But I don't feel like I'm so unique that that's going to be my experience alone. So I guess my question would be, how will that change us? Will it change us as a society? And if so, how?
Yeah. One thing that I'm grateful to you for often is that you bring my consciousness to those who are and have been historically marginalized. And so when I ask this question about denial, there is a piece of that question that relates to racial questions in our country. Because as you have pointed out to me several times, there is already a segment of our population that is awake and aware of injustice, pain,
and suffering. And, yes.
Yeah. So this, you know, so already by my asking this question about denial and awakening, that's not, I guess this, the first observation is that that is not, that doesn't pertain to everybody.
Yeah.
But it does pertain to the dominant culture, I think, and not, I don't mean that necessarily in racial terms, although you can interpret it that way, but this culture of consumerism that I don't know has a racial component. It's the hegemony of economic ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. That is certainly a deep piece of our wider culture of denial of suffering and pain, that we can just fill the hole of our own longings and wants and numb ourselves with consumption. So that's another piece of denial at work in our culture. And I wonder if pandemic time somehow can break through that too.
Right, right. It's one of the many things that you always kind of pull my thinking out to the next, you know, realm. And, you know, as I think about, you know, this whole notion of individualism only works if you can pull it off. Right. And you need a certain amount of power and privilege to pull that off. It's always been interesting to me. I remember back in the days when I was working largely in inner city, I was running ambulances largely in inner cities throughout New England, how much tighter folks in the BIPOC community were, how many generations of a family were, you know, present in the same apartment or in the same building or within the same block, how everybody knew everybody else's kids, just much tighter because there's less power, there's less economic privilege there. So when you have less power and privilege, you have to work together because your survival depends on it, you know. So there's that. When I look at all these kids who are down on spring break right now, and, you know, the governor of Florida has, you know, I don't know what he's smoking, but he's decided we no longer need to take any COVID precautions, which I think was a splendid idea right before spring break. So, you know, you're seeing, like on the news, you see this footage of these kids, you know, elbow to elbow in these clubs and nary a face mask in sight. It is hard for me to believe that there's not going to be a consequence to that. And, you know, what is that headset all about? And how, is it denial? Is it privilege? Is it entitlement? Probably no small amount of entitlement there. They feel they're entitled. It's their senior year. This is their opportunity for spring break. There will never be an opportunity for them to have, you know, spring break while they're in college. And I get it. I mean, I get, you're right. But where does the notion of sacrifice for the common good come in? I mean, Is that gone? You know, it was teetering before Trump came into power, but man, it's almost like the Trump administration and the press, ironically, in the process of making America great again, has absolutely smashed into smithereens any notion of a collective or a whole. And that's how do we resurrect that conversation?
It's so wonderful to have you back in your chair because, as usual, you have anticipated the very next thing where I wanted to go.
Excellent. It's like the mind meld.
It is. Before I go to that next thing, I would just remind our audience that we are teasing some questions today, probing them a little bit, and we will return to them. This is not the only show. I don't know that we're going to have a trilogy, but we're going to at least have a sequel. So, the second question related to
collectivity.
Collectivity.
Yeah.
Being able to respond as a collective of people, which has nothing to do with communism.
Recognizing common stock.
Recognizing common stock. I'm indebted to George Packer, a writer for The Atlantic, his article last June on these kinds of questions. What does the pandemic reveal? Of course, this was last June he was writing. Well, he was writing even before that because it came out in the June
right,
issue.
Right.
So he's writing pretty early on. His question, which I raise and let it be our question, he says, do we trust our leaders and one another enough to summon a collective response to a mortal threat?
Mm.
So a couple of things I find really interesting about the way he phrases the question. One is that he says, do we trust our leaders? And generally, and this is a critique of George Packer, The Atlantic, and media in general, what they mean when they say leaders is generally political leaders, because that's the default position of how we think. So one question is to broaden out our conception of who are leaders. I don't want to go down that path, but I just wanted to name it because it's part of his question. So do we trust leaders and one another enough to summon a collective response to a mortal threat? I'll just say one more thing, Shane, and then I'd love to hear what your response to this George Packer question. Do we trust one another enough? Now, he's writing this, as I say, 6, 7, maybe 8 months ago. Things have changed in that time where this question of trusting one another, well, I'm not even sure that's the question anymore, whether we trust it. I mean, it is the question. Ultimately, it's a key question, finding trust in society. It reminds me of our conversations about Walt Whitman and General Mattis, about bonds of affection in society.
And the necessity for that in order to have a functioning democracy.
Yes. And there's a piece of me that thinks we're beyond, like we have broken the beyond where building bonds of affection is sufficient, because there's such a fracture in even people's basic understanding of the facts. You know, you can't build bonds. We've done a show on this. You can't build bonds of affection with people who
are in a different reality.
Yeah. So that calls for a different kind of spiritual discipline and response.
Yeah, I can hold them affectionately. I can choose to honor their inherent worth and dignity. I can, you know, still maintain that they are children of God. But to build bonds of affection with people with whom, you know, that you cannot have a conversation in real time is a very difficult thing. And I think Packard's observation raises for me another question, which is, how has our view of the possibility of humanity to come together to mount an appropriate response to this question, to this mortal risk, how has that changed? You know, or has it changed for you throughout this pandemic? And if so, how? Because I know as you were reading it, I was sort of kind of tripping around in my own head, fantastic, and thinking, it for me, it's definitely changed. I mean, had you asked me this before this pandemic, I would have drawn from things like, you know, I would have said, of course, we'll pull it together. We always do. I mean, America always comes together in a crisis. We do. Look at what happened post 9/11. People came together. I mean, I was on the pile. I was working down in Manhattan. I know that we didn't want for food, boots, socks, underwear, chapstick, anything we needed was being trucked in en masse, you know, donations from Costco and from, and you know, classrooms around, you know, that just filled up bins with candy and sent it to the workers, you know, who were working on the pile. You know, we had everything we needed, and the people who couldn't come down and do work on the pile were showing up to give blood. You know, the Red Cross was overwhelmed with, you know, blood donations, which they didn't need because, of course, there weren't any survivors, tragically. Before this pandemic, that was my model. That my thought was based on history. We'll come together. We'll get it together. And we'll pull through and we'll be stronger on the other side for it. But this has been really a tragic confluence of events that take us back to that place of real discomfort and maybe the questions that we don't want to ask, you know, which is sort of what has been revealed about us as a people, as a nation. And is there any hope whatsoever of, you know, putting Humpty Dumpty back together again? You know, the democracy Humpty Dumpty that went off the wall in this whole thing has been shattered into 1,000 pieces. I don't know. I mean, the story says all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. So, and maybe this shatters and something else emerges. I don't know. Yeah, I think this has been fun, Chris, because I know I got more questions than answers today. So
let's leave it there. We've teased some questions. I think what you just finished with, Shana, I just feel like that is so strong, like just such a strong vision and a way to excavate really important questions that, again, as we say, have really... we don't want to go there.
We don't want to go there. But let's remind our listeners that this show is a dialogue with you. And if you have some thoughts on these, reach out, post them on our Facebook page or at our website. And we're looking forward to hearing some of your thoughts as we enter into this place of discomfort. Somehow feels appropriate during the season of Lent, doesn't it?
That it does.
Yeah.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. You can join our generous donors on Patreon by going to Patreon. We're also grateful for our fiscal sponsor, Filmmakers Collaborative. As Shana mentioned, you can go to our Facebook page, at What in Gods. You can also go to our website, find out more about What in God's Name, be in touch with us, and also sign up to get our newsletter.
And also find archived shows.
That is so.
Yes.
Our website is whatingods.com, which is
WHATINGODS.
So glad you're back.
I am so glad to be with you today, Chris. It's been wonderful.